We got breaking news. President Trump reveals a red line for Iran.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. Phone lines are open for you at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. If you want to have your voice heard on the air today, it's a great time to call. And you're probably going to want to call in about this because President Trump announced that there is a red line for our interference in Iran. How would we get involved? With pretty strong force, it sounds like. This doesn't feel like all bets are off, kind of all options are on the table. We'll hear from President Trump with sound bites and that kind of thing later on in the broadcast. But how do you feel about this? Do you have flashbacks to Iraq? What do you think about getting involved in what's going on in Iran? Obviously, there has been people taking to the streets, not only in America, but obviously in Iran. There's been the closest thing to a revolution that we've seen. You know, we've had lots of these teases. We talked about that. And now, finally, we are seeing what could be actual regime change, and how the U.S. gets involved is going to be very interesting. Phone lines, again, are open for you at 1-800-684-3110. Again, President Trump essentially saying, weighing the options of when to get involved in what would essentially be, I mean, a quote-unquote war.
That's right. So when you look at what the president said as well, he said that a red line for action would be the killing of people like they have in the past. We would get involved. That's what the president said. Now, what we've seen over the weekend is it appears that at least by some of the estimates, is probably a conservative estimate, that more than 500 people have been killed by the regime thus far. Now, a lot of reports are probably not able to get out because of the internet issues. We've seen that Elon Musk has deployed Starlink, so that has helped a lot of ways to get the message out still, but that internet blackout has been kind of a big issue to try and suppress the voice of the people. But the White House told the CBS News, a spokesperson for the White House, unnamed here, said that what it would look like is we will be hitting them very hard where it hurts. It doesn't mean boots on the ground, but it means hitting them very, very hard where it hurts. You can take that to be an assumption. Calls back to the summer where airstrikes, which were very, very targeted and precise against the nuclear facilities, maybe something like that is what we could infer could be coming from the United States. But maybe not on their military sites, so to speak, like a nuclear facility, but something more that would hurt the IRGC in their attempt to contain what is going on, which is now in its third week, which is going on longer than we've seen in recent history, and it seems to still be growing, not be shut down by the regime.
Yeah, one of the questions that was asked to President Trump was, well, do you think they're going to take you seriously? And he's like, well, let's look at the facts. Let's look what we've done recently. Look at what happened in Venezuela. He also goes, you know, look at what happened with Soleimani. You know, this is not a administration that bluffs a lot in terms of they're getting involved in these kind of actions. Now, obviously, a lot of times he's pushing them to not do it, but it doesn't seem like President Trump, specifically this go-round, has any problem with, getting involved in these kind of situations. I mean, we're seeing some pretty historic action happening, whether you like it or not. That's what I do want to hear from you. When you hear this option that maybe the United States of America could get involved in this, what could be eventual war in Iran, what do you think about it? You know, I kind of want to weigh the people. I want to weigh you guys, your voices. I want to hear what you have to say. You know, this is something that, you know, President Trump definitely ran on a no wars kind of platform. I think that's become very popular within the United States and this entire movement that they built out of the Republican Party. How do you feel? Give me a phone call, 1-800-684-3110. Put it in the chat. I'd appreciate that. And look, the ACLJ is still at it as well. We're going to go over what's been going on. Obviously, also, you know, can't miss out that there was the horrific attack on a synagogue, Mississippi. And we're going to talk to Jeff Balaban a little bit later from ACLJ Jerusalem about that and what anti-Semitism looks like, as we are seeing for the first time in a long time, people like AOC actually calling out anti-Semitism in their own area. What does that mean? Why is it now one of their points? Is it politically motivated? Is there something stronger? Let's get into it. Give me a call at 1-800-684-3110. Support the work of the ACLJ also at aclj.org. You can sign our new petition, pro-life petition, and become a champion if you can.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, and our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
After nearly 50 years, Roe v. Wade, the tragic ruling that manufactured a so-called right to abortion, has been overturned by the United States Supreme Court. This is the moment the ACLJ has been fighting for. It's the biggest victory we've achieved in our three-decade-long fight against the soulless abortion industry. And believe me, abortionists like Planned Parenthood are devastated. This victory would not have been possible without the steadfast prayer and support of ACLJ members like you. On behalf of the entire ACLJ, I thank you for standing with us against the abortion industry and helping us save defenseless babies. I thank you for making this victory possible. And I ask you for your continued prayer and support as we continue to battle against barbaric new abortion laws across our nation.
Welcome back to Secular. We are continuing our discussion on Iran and what it looks like if the American people and the United States gets involved and what level you're comfortable with. Phone lines are being screened right now, so we're going to take some calls coming up in just a moment. 1-800-684-3110, because I want to hear from you. Because when we hear from President Trump making these pretty bold statements saying, you know, what is this? Let's actually hear. Let's go directly to Bite 2. This is President Trump speaking to a reporter, I believe on Air Force One or something similar. Go ahead.
Do you see your red line yet to trigger a response?
No, they're starting to, it looks like, and there seem to be some people killed that aren't supposed to be killed. These are violent, if you call them leaders, I don't know if they're leaders or just they rule through violence. But we're looking at it very seriously. The military is looking at it. And we're looking at some very strong options. We'll make a determination.
So making a very strong options. I mean, that is not, that's being very clear. I feel like that is saying that there could be a lot more to this, Will, not just tough talk.
That's right. And when you see the response from the Iranians, this is from the Iranian foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi. Tough one to say there. He's saying, we are not warmongers, but we are prepared for war. We are also prepared for negotiations, but fair negotiations with equal rights and mutual respect. It's an interesting play by the Iranians. One, it shows, I think, that they know that they're losing grip on this one, that this one is more intense than they've seen at least since 2009. But, okay, we're not warmongers, we're prepared for war. I understand that line coming from the Iranians in response to a red line statement by the president. But we're prepared for negotiations, but fair negotiations. I don't know what they think they're going to negotiate
out on this.
People here negotiate with the U.S. like, we won't kill as many protesters if you do not bomb us.
Yeah, President Trump actually, right after that quote, and I won't play the whole thing because this has a portion of the clip before, said we're looking at very strong options. They followed that up with, some of the protesters were killed through stampeding. There's been many of them were shot. We're getting a full report. I'm getting an hourly report, and we're going to be making a determination. So an hourly report. I think a lot of us thought it could have even happened overnight last night.
Well, and that's what we've seen is that there was another spokesperson I saw this morning on the news that was saying that the president is being constantly updated on this. He says hourly report. This is something that is at the front of his mind. We know that Iran has been an issue that he's dealt with in his first administration. He had very strong statements in the first administration. We saw that the Biden administration gave back a lot of the issues and tried to get back to the negotiating table for a new Iran deal within the Biden administration. But here's the other thing, too. When he talks about, we're prepared for negotiations, but fair negotiations, we're talking about not just President Trump who's strong on Iran. You're talking about Pete Hegseth, Marco Rubio. You're talking about Tulsi Gabbard. You're talking about John Ratcliffe at the CIA. These are individuals whose entire career in the public space has been against the regime in Tehran, and very strongly have had opinions and developed their foreign policy chops looking at wanting a free Iran, a return to the people, not the theocratic genocidal dictators that run the country since the revolution. So when they say things like, we want negotiations, but fair negotiations, I don't think our Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, who has been an Iran hawk his entire career, is going to sit there and be like, you know what? Let's sit at the table and say, yeah, maybe you can stay in power and we'll even like back off on our rhetoric and let this fizzle out on the ground. No, Marco Rubio is probably the most clear-eyed on this foreign policy issue than any of the others that we've seen going on. And we've also seen he can juggle a lot of jobs and hats. He knows how to handle Venezuela, the Europeans, China. He can take on Iran at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to take some phone calls because I asked what you thought. Genuinely, I'm seeing a very mixed reaction on our social. So if you're on YouTube or on Rumble, I'm seeing some people saying, yeah, we got to get involved. We've already been involved. See some people saying, absolutely not. We shouldn't be. You know, this is where it gets a little bit blurry, because if this was a George W. Bush presidency, you know, when you go back to really the last Republican pre-Trump, you go, okay, yeah, we kind of remember what we signed up for, if you will. Mm-hmm. Now, especially in the post-9/11 world, now you have a very different Republican. You have a very different conservative. How do they feel about this? I know some of us come from that old school world, so maybe your mind goes to, yeah, yeah, sure, of course we get involved. But then I'm sure there's a huge group of young people who don't necessarily feel this way. But let's go ahead and take a phone call. Let's go to Mary Ellen in Illinois, probably represents one of those factors. Mary Ellen, go ahead.
Yes, hi. And I've been following very closely over the years, you know, early 2000s, how many times Iran's, you know, leadership, it says, oh, death to the little Satan and death to the big Satan, America. And they have funded with their money Hezbollah, Hamas, ISIS, all those other groups. And they've even sent people over to our country. And we've seen them, you know. They've been arrested already here over the years. And it's like, you know, they want to, they think, so they've been really at war. But I say, President Trump, and we have every right to say no. We will stand with the people. We want free and fair elections that we would oversee and get rid of your IRGDC or whatever that group is, the people that go out and assassinate people, and the Bajis group.
Right.
All of that, you know.
Well, and Mary Ellen, I think that's why, one, there is an administration now that would support those people. We saw the closest thing within modern political history, 2009, the Green Revolution, where the Obama-Biden administration at the time would do nothing to show even support verbally for what was happening on the ground. We know that this is a brutal regime. We know the evil that they have put across the world. We know that they had very close relations with Venezuela. And the way that they both made money off black market oil was enriching themselves to further terror, not to make a better life for their people. So all these things are connected. But you're also starting to see the people on the street that are fed up with it. And it needs to be a situation where Iran could be free and the return of the Persian people, that proud history, is what rules Iran, not the theocratic genocidal dictatorship that is the Ayatollah.
And not us either.
I 100% agree. Yeah. I think that supporting the overthrow of the Ayatollah, it does not necessarily mean that we are nation building and getting in there. The Persian people are very smart people.
They may not need it.
Very resourceful. There is actually a lot of wealth within Iran that can help this get back to where it is. That is part of the problem why it's been such a tragedy, is the squandering of the wealth of that nation on terror, on Hamas, on Hezbollah, on assassination plots against our president. Things like that. They are not the good guys here. And as Mary Ellen said, we've been at war with them. They've been at war with us for years.
Yeah, there's actually a clip, and I'll see if I can find it and send it to our crew, of Benjamin Netanyahu actually talking about what regime change would mean even within Israel with working with the Persian people, with the Iranian people, and how happy that they would be there because of the brilliance that has come out. He goes, the amount of people that, you deal with on a normal day basis in America or in Israel or wherever it is that have, or you know, the UK have left, had to leave and flee Iran, but are, you know, some of the biggest companies in the world have been created by incredible Iranian people. So what does that look like when their world is back open up and you're able to actually do that within these major capital cities? Again, you have to do a little bit of digging. I always say this because I think we put on our heads Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq. You start kind of piecing Gaza even. You start piecing things together in your mind as just like the Middle East. That's changed a little bit with how we see Saudi Arabia now and how we see some of that. But, you know, like Will said, Tehran and these areas were not these, you know, desolate places. This is thriving areas of the world, you know, in most people's lifetime.
Right. And once again, too, I see what someone, Lisa, on YouTube said, something that the president told Iran not to kill protesters and he should follow up with what he says. And that is true. You think back to the damage that Barack Obama did with Syria, with the red line on chemical weapons. Like, if they use chemical weapons on their people, we will intervene. They did, and the American people and the U.S. did nothing. So, once again, we may not want to get involved, but I think if the president draws a red line, they better live up to their word and follow through with something, or else then you do end up with situations like Syria that probably could have been stopped or changed or made better if the president had followed through. Instead, it gave more leeway to the Assad regime to continue that civil war. And now what do you have? A former Al-Qaeda leader as the president of Syria. They're hoping to be a better country going forward. We'll find out. But there's a lot of questions still with that. If you can make good on your word, I think that you're in a better spot.
All right, phone lines are completely jammed right now. We're going to take a bunch of those coming up. And Jordan's going to be joining us via phone here in the next segment. He's working on a case. It's been pretty interesting. We're going to dive into that. Then later on, Jeff Balaban, ACLJ Jerusalem. Of course, not a quiet week in the world of anti-Semitism. Once again, as we saw even in states like Mississippi, we saw some really horrific attacks. So we'll be discussing that and more coming up on Secula. With that being said, I want you to support the work of the ACLJ. It's a great time to do it at aclj.org. You can go to sign a new petition, or you can become an ACLJ champion even. That gets someone who gives financially on a monthly basis. We appreciate that so much. We'll be right back with more on Secula.
After nearly 50 years, Roe versus Wade, the tragic ruling that manufactured a so-called right to abortion, has been overturned by the United States Supreme Court. This is the moment the ACLJ has been fighting for. It's the biggest victory we've achieved in our 3-decade-long fight against the soulless abortion industry. And believe me, abortionists like Planned Parenthood are devastated. This victory would not have been possible without the steadfast prayer and support of ACLJ members like you. On behalf of the entire ACLJ, I thank you for standing with us against the abortion industry and helping us save defenseless babies. I thank you for making this victory possible. And I ask you for your continued prayer and support as we continue to battle against barbaric new abortion laws across our nation.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, and our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
Sekulo. We do have two lines open for you at 1-800-684-3110. If you want to speak your mind and your thoughts on what's going on in Iran, we'd like to hear from you. I know that it's a big deal, and obviously later on we'll be talking to Jeff Balaban, ACLJ Jerusalem, about the attacks over the weekend, and the Mississippi's largest synagogue was burned. We also had a lot of interesting messages coming from Democrats, actually seem to be condemning anti-Semitism for the first time in, I don't know, what feels like many years. Maybe they got some poll numbers back. We'll discuss that as well. And you can be part of that at 1-800-684-3110. But Jordan is joining us. My brother, Jordan Sekulo, joining us by phone, executive director here. Jordan, I know you got an update as you are traveling on the road and working on some big cases. So let us know what's going on.
Yeah, so there's a huge case tomorrow at the Supreme Court of the United States involving, of course, this whole sports issue with can boys play on girls' teams. And this issue is really relating to basically starting even one of the cases. It's two cases that are combined, one out of Idaho. We're close, of course, with the West Virginia Attorney General. That's the main case. That's a case involving mostly high school sports, which is the crux of sports anyways, when it comes to the state level, before you get to the collegiate level where the NCAA would be the one in charge of all those kind of decisions. And people might have already thought that this was kind of decided because of some other moves by President Trump. But in fact, it's still being fought out. It's been fought out for 4 or 5 years. So West Virginia has the case that just says, it's just basic. It's that if you're a boy, you play on the boys' team. If you're a girl, you play on the girls' team. And there's no crossover. They've taken this now all the way to the Supreme Court. They won at the lower court, at the district court, lost at the appellate court. And so now the Supreme Court has the ability to kind of settle this once and for all for the entire country. And I'm really proud of our Attorney General, who's a ACLJ alumni, J.B. McCuskey, and his team in West Virginia, leading the charge there to kind of finalize this. And I think that really people, Logan, when you talk to people about this whole issue, it's even past kind of this trans politics issue. It's really about kids and sports and safety, and especially women's sports and protecting women's sports from boys or men, and in some cases men, 18-year-olds who might not be good enough or weren't the best on their men's team, but could be the greatest and set all the state records on the if they decide to be on the women's team, and all the issues that involve, the injuries that involve. So I think once and for all, the Supreme Court now has a chance before it in a multi-hour oral argument tomorrow to finally make that decision, which I know for so many of us who have children, especially daughters, want to know that Title IX was there to protect them and their the sports, and so that they can play those sports amongst themselves, amongst equal athletic ability. And it's still very difficult to make those teams. Even in high school, you have to be a great athlete. But again, this is the, people might have thought this was kind of over because of executive orders and other kind of decisions by the statements by states and presidents. But in fact, most of these laws have been stopped by lower courts. So this is the chance for the Supreme Court to put an end to this, hopefully, once and for all, which seems crazy that we're even having to argue it in 2026.
I think you bring up an interesting point, because President Trump has certainly been one of those presidents that will make some big statements and will call for a lot of things. We saw them over the weekend. We saw even things like, hey, we're going to make credit card interest rates no more than 10%. We saw big businesses, the big corporations, can't start buying up single-family homes like they've been doing. Whether you agree or disagree on that, I think we can have a whole different discussion on what that looks like and whether the legalities are. But he makes a lot of these big statements, and some of them can happen, but some, as you say, then get fought out after those are made.
Right. They get fought out after. And remember, this initiated with some of the college funding. Now, these cases involve elementary and high school and middle school, so more of what the state controls directly. Colleges and the NCAA have already been implementing their own rules, and there was a lot of talk about that with federal funding tied to it. Remember that with California and Gavin Newsom and back and forth there. So on some of these issues, yes, it's been settled, but it has not been settled yet at the high school level and even at the elementary level. And I think that this case, it presents the Supreme Court, it's why they're taking 2 hours with it tomorrow, the opportunity to finally say, to come down to this, and we hope the reason they took the case, which again West Virginia lost on appeal, so Supreme Court decided to take the case knowing that the lower court decision that held would say, no, you can't, that you can have these boys play on these girls' sports teams, that they took the case. That's always a good sign. It doesn't mean you're a guarantee a win, but we're just proud of our alumni and someone we work with very closely still at the ACLJ and with the West Virginia Attorney General's office and his Solicitor General and their whole team, that they are literally leading the charge on this case. And again, that can kind of, I think, settle it for everyone. And I think it should be settled for everyone. And I know that as someone with two daughters, and Logan, you with two daughters as well, that this is something, again, that just needs to be really not be an issue. It shouldn't even be a discussion. It's, you know, if you're a boy, you should play on the boys' sports team. If you're a girl, you should play on the girls' sports team. We don't really need to get into the complications of sexuality or anything like that. This is just about sports. Hey, and fairness.
And Jordan, I think, once again, I want to bring up what you said about the Attorney General of West Virginia, J.B. McCuskey, who many people on this broadcast have seen many times on this show over the years, even before when he was state auditor out of West Virginia. But also the importance of what we do here at the ACLJ when we have individuals that are ACLJ alumni, that they come, they work here, they get those chops, they know about which types of cases to take and how to fight for eventually the people of their state, but how that still ends up leaving a lasting legacy, not just on wherever they go next or wherever they serve next, but for the entire country, that it's important that strong conservative lawyers like JB, who come out of a system like the ACLJ, are able to continue to impact the entire country going forward.
And they know the arguments to make to win. You know, I think that that's what we do at the ACLJ. It's not just about getting controversial cases. That's pretty easy to do as a lawyer. You can go and find controversial clients. People do it all the time, and they get lots of media attention for it. This is about winning for the right reasons. And the right reasons here are not to be nasty to people who may be going through some problems in high school or even lower, or whatever their parents are pushing on them. It's about protecting the other people who play on the team. You know, your daughter, that makes sure that, you know, if they're at the top level, they're the ones that can set the records. And they're not going to have some 18-year-old boy decide he's going to be a girl for next year and, you know, set state records that can never be beaten again. So this is about, I think, righting a short-term wrong in our country that has just been ridiculous. And West Virginia, like you said, Will, brought the case for West Virginians, but it's made its way all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And because of that, the Attorney General, J.B. McCuskey, his Solicitor General, they will, with a victory here, again, could set the stage for the future so that this is no longer an issue. And I think that's where the majority of the country is. I think most people, if they can take their politics out of it and just think about the sports aspect, they understand the locker room situation, they understand the strength situation, the testosterone situation, they get it. And so we will give you updates. It's going to be a long case, so we might not have updates from the case on the show until Thursday. If we do get some updates while the show's going on tomorrow, we'll try to get them to you.
All right, with that, we have a second half hour coming up. Thanks, Jordan, for joining us. Jeff Balaban from ACLJ Jerusalem is going to be joining us. We also have a packed phone bank right now, so we're going to do our best to get to as many of these calls as we possibly can. So stay on hold if you're on hold. If you want to support the work of the ACLJ, ACLJ.org. It's a great place to do it. Find all the incredible free content. But, of course, if you want to support, great way to do it. Becoming an ACLJ champion, someone who gives on a monthly basis. We'll be right back.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. ACLJ.org.
keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Second half hour of Seculo coming at you now. And of course, if you are joining us live, fantastic. We love to have you live each and every day, 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern time. You can work your way back from there. We have a full bank of phone calls. The big topic of the day is President Trump said there is a red line for how we're going to get involved in Iran. And look, it looks to be that they may be crossing that line right now. Of course, maybe we should hear from President Trump once again to set this up before we go take some of the phone calls. Let's go back in here. President Trump, let's do the longer bite since we haven't heard it yet. Let's go to, bite three?
Yes.
There seem to be some people killed that aren't supposed to be killed. These are violent, if you call them leaders, I don't know if they're leaders or just they rule through violence. But we're looking at it very seriously. The military is looking at it. And we're looking at some very strong options. We'll make a determination. Some of the protesters were killed through the stampeding. I mean, you know, there's so many of them. And some were shot. But we get a full report. I'm getting an hourly report. And we're going to make a determination.
Getting an hourly report, again, of what's going on and what the determination will be, how America gets involved. I pose the question, how do you think we should get involved? Do you have flashbacks of Iraq? Do you have flashbacks of the world terror? Do you feel like that's a good thing, bad thing? Let's take some phone calls. A lot of you called in. Pete's calling in New York on line one. Pete, go ahead.
How are you?
Good,
now,
good.
I'm an advocate of what the president is doing, especially against the axis of evil. All right. But I want, and you know, and I know prophetically, China, Russia, and Iran is biblically involved. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, so, but I want to. There's interpretations of that. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Okay. So. But I wanted to say this. So you don't think this giving Putin the green light to go all out against Ukraine and perhaps go full force as well as other European Union countries up there? And lastly, you don't think this giving China the green light now to go ahead and take Taiwan? And if all these things happen, are we going to – give me one question, one more per second. Are we going to be able to deal with Venezuela, Iran, as well as China and Russia?
Yeah, Pete, it feels like it is heating up. And I'll be honest with you that I don't disagree with some of your thoughts there saying, you know, is this going to give more of an opportunity for people to respond? Of course, I don't know if we got that part. I think it bust out. You were referring to originally what happened in Venezuela and what that looks like now and then how that now is spreading throughout the world, spreading to Iran. You know, we are hearing a different country of the week, if you will, of how the U.S. is getting involved. Very different than President Trump's mantra, if you will, for the years of running, but it's a different time. And look, Pete, you know, we were looking it up the other day. When do you know if you're in a world war? Do you know you're in the world war until during the world war, or do you know it after? People never say World War II until years after. They just call it the war that we were in. So we very well could be in the middle of this and not be totally aware.
Well, and Pete, I said this on the broadcast last week. One, I don't think that Putin nor Xi Jinping are looking for a green light from the actions of the United States to further their adventurism in the world, whether that be Ukraine or whether that be in Taiwan when it comes to China. I genuinely think they are going to take those actions when they feel like they want to take those actions. We know that from seeing the invasion of Ukraine in the first place. So I don't think that the Venezuela actions taking Maduro is going to necessarily embolden Putin or Xi Jinping any more than they already are. I understand the concerns. I also would point to what President Trump is doing militarily is very much in line with what he did in the first term. Airstrikes, hitting ISIS like he did in the first term. It's not starting wars like the boots on the ground, full-scale invasion, nation building that we saw in Iraq and Afghanistan. They are more using American authority and power in a way that shows strength instead of getting us into a boondoggle. But I understand the concerns. And yes, I think a lot of people share your concerns as well, Pete. We understand the goal, but we still have fatigue from the endless wars that we've lived with the majority of a lot of our lives.
Yeah. Hey, stay on hold if you're on hold right now. I know we're going to get to you in the last segment of the show. Next up, we are going to have Jeff Balaban from ACLJ Jerusalem. We want to make sure we get an update from him. But then stay on hold. I know you'll be on hold for a long time. Just stay on hold for a few more minutes, and I'll get to you coming up in the next segment. Support the work of the ACLJ at ACLJ.org. Got new petitions you can get involved in. Go to ACLJ.org/sign. Be a part of the team. We'll be right back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, and our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
After nearly 50 years, Roe v. Wade, the tragic ruling that manufactured a so-called right to abortion, has been overturned by the United States Supreme Court. This is the moment the ACLJ has been fighting for. It's the biggest victory we've achieved in our three-decade-long fight against the soulless abortion industry. And believe me, abortionists like Planned Parenthood are devastated. This victory would not have been possible without the steadfast prayer and support of ACLJ members like you. On behalf of the entire ACLJ, I thank you for standing with us against the abortion industry and helping us save defenseless babies. I thank you for making this victory possible. And I ask you for your continued prayer and support as we continue to battle against barbaric new abortion laws across our nation.
Secular. We got two lines still open at 1-800-684-3110. And in the next segment, I'm going to try to take absolutely as many calls as I can. I know many of you have been on hold for nearly a half hour. We will get to you. If you've been on hold for that long, just stay on hold and we'll get to you. Jeff Balaban's joining us, head of ACLJ Jerusalem. Jeff, obviously a very interesting weekend, sad weekend. Again, we had a historic synagogue in Mississippi burned. Sounds like a headline, you know, from 100 years ago at this point. It doesn't feel like this should be what we're seeing in America. And at the same time, we had some interesting rhetoric coming out of the top Democrats, some of them in New York City. We'll discuss those because they just feel, you know, about time, but also feel why now. But let's start at least with that. That horrendous attack once again on a place of worship, and specifically it being this historic synagogue in a state like Mississippi, one that doesn't necessarily need the PR for anti-Semitism.
Well, I mean, people are making much of the fact that this is not the first time that this synagogue was attacked. The synagogue was attacked in the 1960s by the Klan as well. And once again, it's not safe really to be a Jew anywhere in America, unfortunately, and be conspicuously Jewish. You know, as you know, I travel back and forth to Israel quite frequently, from Israel to Israel in the States. And I keep on noting that the one terminal at the airport that has direct flights to Israel is the one terminal that since October 7th has had to have a SWAT team outside full time, because even going there is a danger. Every synagogue is considered to be in danger. Every kosher restaurant, every place Jews congregate is considered to be in danger. This is very painful to see. It's very frightening to see. And it's also painful to see that the mainstream media didn't really cover this for the first 24 hours. It wasn't covered at all.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, I sent Will the article the morning after, a few hours after. And look, for some of us, that's kind of in our algorithm, if you will, unfortunately,
right?
When these things happen. You know, if you're following certain accounts, you'll see this come up. But no, it made very little news. It made very little news about this. And of course, you know, thankfully it doesn't feel like, you know, people were injured or anything like that. So that obviously does lead to that, but you'd think it would at least pop up a bit more. And at the same time, Jeff, I was, you know, on X looking at this, and there was, you know, the calls, specifically there were the Iranian protests that were happening this weekend, you know, the people of Iran, that's great. That's happening. There's some good things happening in that world. But there was also protests in Queens. People were chanting that they supported Hamas. You know, say it loud, say it clear. We support Hamas here. And then you had a response from AOC, of all people, AOC saying, hey, so marching into predominantly, oh, it starts with hey, hey. So marching into predominantly Jewish neighborhoods and leading with a chant saying we support Hamas is a disgusting and anti-Semitic thing to do. Pretty basic. You know, this is the kind of thing we would have loved to have had, you know, a couple of years ago. It does feel a little too late that now they're in your neighborhood. What happened here? Have polls shifted? I mean, it feels like there's these moments, because now we also saw response from Mamdani. There are moments where it feels like the narrative maybe gets shifted. And look, I'm all for her saying that. I did repost it and put, well, it's about time, but Kenneth Copeland, I say it's about time. Because it does feel like not only a little too late, but it just feels a little maybe opportunistic in a weird way. Again, I want to condemn her saying it. I'm happy she's saying it.
I'm not. Honestly, this is gaslighting. There's no question about it. It also took them a long time to react to this. Mamdani took him also many hours, and a lot of criticism and complaint that he was being silent when there were pro-Hamas chants. And let's be very clear. Being pro-Hamas isn't being critical of Israel.
No.
And going to an American Jewish community, which has nothing to do with Israel. It's a foreign country. Jews in America are Americans. And, you know, but this has been happening and people think it's normal and just it's become part of the entire background. That's what we work on at ACLJ. It happens at places of work. It happens in universities. It happens on the streets. People just walk up to somebody they think is a Jew and starts attacking them with whatever the excuse is. And it took them a long time. But no, in politics, we talk about the Overton window, which is that which is acceptable to talk about in politics. Most things, you know, are fine to talk about. Some things are considered too fringe or too radical or too crazy or too evil, too immoral. And that window sometimes shifts dramatically. And so what I think is happening here is that with the election of Mamdani, who was an overt anti-Semite, there's no question about it. And he stands for everything anti-Semitic and he hates Israel. And he was very supportive of the whole, you know, he wasn't going to condemn globalize the Intifada. What does globalize the Intifada means? It means enact brutal murder against Jews all over the world. That's what globalize the Intifada means. It doesn't mean anything else. And he wouldn't condemn it. I think they've realized that his election has so shocked and alarmed people, even the reliable leftists, even groups like the ADL, which you know claims to be against anti-Semitism, but somehow only sees it when it's on the right and never saw it on the left. They've had to react to this because it's so extreme. And so the Democrats, I think, are beginning to reel back on how extreme they've become. The Mamdani thing is a shock factor. And so I think now people like AOC has been leading the charge against Israel and the Jews now for quite a while. When she came in with the squad, she was very much part of that. I think they've realized that it's gone too far politically for upcoming elections. And so what we're seeing now is gaslighting. It's not helping the Jews. It's not fighting anti-Semitism. It's pretending that they care when in fact everything their actions have done until now and continue to do supports Hamas's agenda here in America.
And Jeff, it's not like this is the first time in New York over the past few years. There have been major protests where slogans supporting directly Hamas, not just globalize the Intifada, which we know what it means, but directly supporting Hamas, going all the way back to Columbia when they were saying, leave the students alone that are shouting that they support Hamas. Don't send the NYPD there to stop this, where they're harassing and targeting Jewish students. This has been going on for years, and they were silent about it. But now it isn't just AOC. That's what is, and we need to point out to people. This is coordinated. It is a Democratic op that's going on, because you have the newly elected mayor, newly installed mayor of New York, Mamdani, who said that chants in support of a terrorist organization have no place in our city. You have AOC, which we talked about, Chuck Schumer. Let's be clear, Hamas is a terrorist organization committed to the destruction of Jews while imposing its brutal rule on Palestinians. Letitia James, Hamas is a terrorist organization. We don't support terrorists, period. The governor, Kathy Hochul, Hamas is a terrorist organization that calls for genocide of Jews. Senator Gillibrand, Hamas is a terrorist organization committed to the murder of Jews. It's all coming down from the same, it's the same talking point. They all posted right. This within an hour of each other. This is not organic reaction to what is horrific, but seems like people got desensitized to in New York. This is a political operation happening, and I mean, I would venture to bet as well that not only are they being opportunistic, not only are they seeing some polling numbers that they can maybe exploit, but my prediction is they're going to flip it and say, look at the Tucker Carlsons, look at the Candace Owens. As they go into this midterms, You know who the real anti-Semites are? It's conservatives. It's Tucker Carlson. And don't disagree with that statement.
Wrong.
But they are trying to now, as you said, gaslight the American people.
Yeah, I would say Tucker has lost any right to call himself conservative, but there's nothing conservative about Tucker.
Fair.
I think you're right. I think they're going to try and point, as they do, to the other side. And by the way, both sides need to be careful about this. Politicizing it doesn't help the Jews, doesn't help America, and doesn't help the war on Judeo-Christian civilization, which all of these guys are fighting the same war, whether it's the Islamists or the progressives or this new Tucker faction that call themselves Christian nationalists, but seems to have very little tolerance for much in the way of Christians and this country. And they talk about Judeo-Christian as blasphemous and satanic. So it's all the same. But yeah, this is clearly coordinated political messaging. We're all very familiar with this. This is and it's gaslighting. I mean, it's adding insult to injury. This is not protecting the Jews. It's not protecting America. It's further undermining it for political reasons. And it's very, very dangerous. And it's very frightening. And the fact that they've decided, oh, well, under the polling, Hamas is something which is bad enough that we can, you know, use them as though they're the bad guy. The other thing they're going to do is this particular faction is going to equate, you know, the Israeli leadership with Hamas. Which is, they're already kind of doing that in the weeks leading up to this, right? When Mamdani saying that he would, you know, arrest Bibi or others if they came into New York. And so this is trying to recalibrate the narrative in a way that's very dangerous because it's all gaslighting. It's all lying to us. These people do support the genocide of Israel, the annihilation of Israel. They've done it all along. But so it's a dangerous week. So from just to wrap up these two parts of the same story, which is the mood in America is extremely dangerous right now. The fact that people are willing to be violent against institutions, arson, other violence, chant for death and murder in our streets against American citizens, it's something which should alarm all Americans. The fact that they haven't been focused on Jews in these cases is very alarming, obviously, to all of us who care about that. But don't forget, they are very much hostile to Christian America as well.
That's right, Jeff. Thank you so much for joining us. Always great to have your work in support of ACLJ Jerusalem. Again, when you support the work of the ACLJ, you support people like Jeff in the offices that we have there and making sure that we are supportive of not just the Israeli people, but the Jewish people here in America as well. With that, we're going to take a lot of your phone calls coming up. We have a full bank. Well, one call, one line open, actually. 1-800-684-3110. Get in line. Some of you have been on hold for close to 40 minutes. We will get to you. I promise they'll be next. Stay on hold. We'll be right back with more on Seculo. If you want to support the work of the ACLJ, support this show, go to aclj.org. We'll be back with more coming right up.
After nearly 50 years, Roe versus Wade, the tragic ruling that manufactured a so-called right to abortion, has been overturned by the United States Supreme Court. This is the moment the ACLJ has been fighting for. It's the biggest victory we've achieved in our 3-decade-long fight against the soulless abortion industry. And believe me, abortionists like Planned Parenthood are devastated. This victory would not have been possible without the steadfast prayer and support of ACLJ members like you. On behalf of the entire ACLJ, I thank you for standing with us against the abortion industry and helping us save defenseless babies. I thank you for making this victory possible. And I ask you for your continued prayer and support as we continue to battle against barbaric new abortion laws across our nation.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, and our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org. www.thefacts.org.
Welcome back to Secula. We are going to take your phone calls right now at 1-800-684-3110. I'm just going to try to do these in the order they came in because there's a lot of you have been on hold for a while. And hopefully we'll have some answers for you. Mike in Oklahoma, hopefully you're still there. Thanks for holding.
Yeah, hey, we know that NATO has like the Article 5. And I was wondering if Iran, Russia, China, North Korea has a similar red line pact. Now, we know that the bombing didn't cause that, but is there a point where, okay, they've reached this point, now we're going to get in this? Does anybody know if they have anything like that?
So, Mike, the what you're referencing also for others, the Article 5 of NATO states that an attack against one is an attack against all. It's a mutual defense agreement that that is formalized within NATO. The Russians and the Chinese, which would be the ones of that group you listed, obviously the others, North Korea, Iran, don't have a formalized defense agreement like that, mutual defense agreement. They do have a lot of military cooperation. They do joint exercises. They help each other out. They sell technology, things of that nature. But they don't have a formalized mutual defense agreement. So the answer is no. There is not a NATO-style Article 5 of the Axis of Evil, if you will.
Yeah, hopefully that answers your question, Mike. And we'll make sure our team is on that to make sure we get the proper answers for you. Sometimes that takes a little bit of time, so I'm glad we're able to do that. Let's continue on. Look, you guys battled it out for about 10 seconds here of who gets on first. This is Fuad, who is calling from Utah, an Iranian citizen. Go ahead, Fuad.
I just wanted to point out one of the challenges right now that this administration and previous administrations have had is over the 40 years that this regime has been in power, is that who is going to take over?
Right.
The problem is, in 1979, there was a power vacuum, and that's how the mullahs got in. Who's going to be taking over? That's biggest, one of the biggest concerns right now, I'm sure, that they're going to have in trying to figure out who's going to take over.
Yeah,
because the evil it's going to be better than the evil you don't know. And the same kind of situation that Syria is now in. I don't think that the Shah, late Shah's son is qualified. What has he done in the last 40 years?
Yeah, right.
He is not qualified.
And you are starting to see some of those,
conversations
publicly in the United States amongst people that follow stuff like this as well. I know, obviously, you're following it as well, Fuad. But yeah, that is. There are also multiple. He's the one, the son of the Shah, who has kind of made a big splash on social media. But there are other groups that also have been fighting externally against the regime for a long time that will want to try and move in there. Anytime there's regime change, it's never a clean process.
It's bumpy.
And once again, I think the people of Iran are fed up with the mullahs, but then you are going to see, as Fuad said, a power vacuum and outside interests that are going to try to fill that. Yeah. And as he mentioned with Syria, what was stable? Assad.
Yeah.
Was he brutal and murdering his people? Yes. But now you have a former Al-Qaeda leader that is the president of Syria.
Like, and then the other side, we just had a conversation, someone in the chat saying, hey, the Shah's son is a seasoned combat fighter pilot, is a diplomat as well. So you're going to have this political battle happen. It's where America gets involved as well. You know, Venezuela, we're obviously getting very involved and said, it could be where we take control of it for 18 months and start working out the plans for the future. So you know what? Who knows what it's going to look like? That's why I even posed this question for those who are supportive of this action. Let's go to Tom now in West Virginia, who's watching on the Salem News Channel. Tom, you're on the air.
Yeah, first I want to preface my comment of the burning of the synagogue in Mississippi. Number one, I'm a Christian by faith, Christian by choice. However, I am a Jew and a Zionist in solidarity, and I am fed up with this anti-Semitism and the bullying of Jews worldwide, and especially in this country, and it's now coming from the American left.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to talk about Iran, and I support the president getting involved in this. I am a Trump supporter. I voted for him going back to 16, 20, and 24. The problem with Iran is that the mullahs have made it perfectly clear their intentions. Death to Israel, death to the United States. They're not going to launch a nuclear weapon into our country. If they ever detonate one, a nuclear weapon, they will launch one into Israel. Make no mistake about it. And I don't know a whole lot about Islam, but essentially these people want Armageddon. And once Armageddon happens, their belief is the 12th Imam is going to come down and everybody's right. going to live happily ever after. These people are insane.
Only cutting you off for time here.
But Tom, that's exactly right. The strain of Shia Islam, 12er Shia Islam, is what is adhered to by the mullahs and by the Ayatollah and the president of Iran. And yeah, they are an apocalyptic death cult. It's not a formalized, you know, historic ancient religion like you would look at and be like, okay, we don't agree, but we don't want each other to die. This is a theocratic death cult that wants to bring about the end of the world so their messianic figure can return, the 12th Imam. And how do they do that? By bringing on Armageddon, by killing Jews.
So, Tom, thank you so much for your call. I do want to try to get in at least one more. Ann's calling in Pennsylvania online, too. Ann, go ahead. Debbie, stay on hold. We'll try.
Yes. Hey, guys. You guys are so great that you have my emotions going all over the place here. I called to say that Iraq is not Iran. Iran is not Iraq. And we need to be able to not only support Trump in a time of need, but to trust him when it counts the most. If we do not trust our commander-in-chief at this time as Christians and as Christians who support Israel, and I totally agree with this past caller, Israel has been on the attack in so many ways, and it is the Hebrew Jews that are in America who their descendants are Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. And they're not believers of Christianity now, but they will be because the Bible says so. The Bible also talks about why we support Israel and those who curse her shall be cursed. It's because of, and why did God choose Israel for his son to be born as a Jew? Why this? Why that? But Israel this, Israel that, and get Iraq and Iran, as far as that's concerned, these are two different wars. These are two totally different wars. It's not going to be boots on the ground. We don't have the intel that President Trump has. We don't know.
I appreciate your help. I'm only cutting up. I hate to even cut you off. We have less than a minute left on the air. So I appreciate you calling. You feel free to call back tomorrow, even to get you some more time. So I agree with what you're saying. I think that's a good comment. Debbie in Florida, unfortunately, I don't think we're going to be able to get to you. Is there any way we can go to her real quick? Let's go to you for 20, you got like 20 seconds. Go ahead, Debbie.
Okay, wow. I'm calling in response to the guy who said that it would provoke Russia and China, basically. I think it would have the opposite effect if Trump did something decisive in support of the people in Iran. I think it would set them back on their heels. Yep. And I do think Reza Pahlavi is ready to run a transitional government so they can hold elections. That's who the people want on the street, apparently.
All right, Debbie, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your comment. You know, I like to give all different sides points of view. With that, that's going to wrap up the show today. A lot of great callers today, including Debbie. Appreciate all of you listening. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. Make sure you're liking, subscribing, and doing all that. We'll be back for you tomorrow.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.